How you doing?
Oh, I've got a little bit of a cold that won't go away, but apart from that, I'm okay.
Oh, geez. Well, thank you on behalf of the Wildcat for talking to us. I'll make this quick and easy for you.
Okay.
Just to let you know a little bit about our paper. We're a college paper down at University of Arizona. We have a readership of 40,000, and it's mainly college students and such. So, anyway, let's go ahead and get this started. First question is, what is your main inspiration for making music?
Well, this might sound very simple and naive, but my main inspiration is just to make music that I love, and hopefully in the process I'll make music that other people might like as well.
Uh-huh. Okay. And now you've been doing this for 10 years now, which a lot of people really probably don't even know. And given the success of Play, do you think that you've lost a sense of personal privacy?
I don't really have any much personal privacy to speak of anyway.
Okay.
And I'm not really too attached to the idea of personal privacy.
Okay.
I don't really have a family. You know, I have some aunts and uncles and cousins and a stepfather that I really like, but as far as, you know, I live alone and I work alone, so I don't really have any, you know, secrets that I feel the need to protect.
Okay.
I mean, I understand a lot of people are very attached to the idea of personal privacy, but, you know, I'm pretty comfortable being a quasi-public figure who doesn't have much privacy.
Okay. And then, you know, with all the accolades that your last album, Play, has received, how do you judge what you feel is good music? Is it because of awards or personal feeling or?
No, I mean, yeah, for me, the response to music, what makes for good music, it's a purely subjective decision that any individual makes on their own.
Okay.
I don't think it has anything to do with musicianship. I don't think it has anything to do with style or genre. I think it's purely a subjective response to an individual piece of music. I mean, I love George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, but I also really like Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
Okay.
And, you know, I love Black Sabbath and I love John Coltrane. I can't say that there's any one formula from my perspective for what makes for good music.
Oh, okay. And then also, you know, we know a lot of, about you from, you know, bios and press releases and all this kind of stuff. And it says you're a very spiritual person. How does that play into making of the records and albums and such?
It's funny, when people talk about the word spiritual, I really don't know what they mean.
Oh, really?
It's a word that gets used an awful lot, but I don't. No one's ever really been able to give me a successful definition of what spiritual means.
I see.
So I wouldn't even know how to answer that.
Okay. And you know, we're like I said, a college newspaper and geared to young adults. What do you think the greatest obstacle that young adults face in the American culture right now?
The one greatest obstacle? Whew. That's a really tough question. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't see that young adults in America really face any great obstacles.
Okay.
You know, we live in a time of... I mean, I'm not saying that we live in an ideal culture, but we live in a time of relative peace and prosperity with low unemployment and sort of interesting career opportunities for a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that might not be the sort of thing that young adults want to hear. I know a lot of... I mean, and the reason I say that is because I've traveled around the world quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And I've been to parts of the world where people face real, really serious obstacles. Like, I had an ex-girlfriend who grew up in Eastern Europe.
Uh-huh.
And when it was still communist.
Right.
And, you know, she was told where to go to school. She was told what she was going to study. She was told what her job was going to be. Her parents were told where to live. You know, they weren't allowed to express themselves. They weren't allowed to travel. They weren't allowed to innovate or do anything. You know, they were told everything that they should do. Now, that's a pretty serious obstacle.
Right.
And, you know, then I have some friends who live in Macedonia and some friends who live in Serbia where the unemployment rate is over 60 or 70%.
Huh.
You know, so they cannot work.
Right.
And they can't travel and they have no money. And friends of theirs have been blown apart by mines and have been shot in the wars. So it's like, those are very serious obstacles. You know.
Interesting.
But I understand also the sense of ennui and malaise that comes with being, you know, a young American in times of peace and prosperity. You know, I grew up in the suburbs. I know how depressing and daunting looking at an individual's future can be.
Oh, okay.
You know, even when you sort of seemingly have the whole world at your feet, it can still be kind of depressing.
Hmm. Okay.
So I'm not saying it's easy to be a young adult in the United States in the year 2000. I'm just saying that, you know, the fact is, you know, we have low unemployment and we're not at war with anyone. And, yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Let's see now. Back to your music. That was just one question that I thought would be an interesting angle to ask you and get your perspective on. But why do you think that your music has reached such a diverse audience, especially with play, of course?
I think part of it is that music, you know, contemporary music is so rigidly formatted. You know, it's, like if you look at the U.S. album charts, it's either, you know, everything that sells seems to be either, you know, sort of generic alternative rock or R&B or hip-hop or country western or pop. And I know myself and most of my friends are tired with music. You know, we're fed up with music that's so easily formatted. And I think one of the reasons play is successful is because it's a very diverse, eclectic record. You know, because I mean, most records I buy, every song sounds exactly the same.
Right.
You know, you buy, you know, like a Third Eye Blind record, and I have nothing against Third Eye Blind, but it's like you hear the first couple songs and you get the point. You know, and then you get the sense that, you know, they didn't, you know, a lot of these bands, it seems like they're not writing songs out of any great love of music, they're writing songs because they're getting so much pressure from the record company to make stuff that can get played in the radio. And I think one reason the play has been successful is because it is. It's a diverse and emotional body of work, and it doesn't fit any one format or any one style.
Oh, I see. Okay. Now, you've been playing guitar since the age of 9 or so. What prompted you to pick up that guitar and try to start playing?
Part of it was the fact that my mother owned a guitar, and it was just lying around. And I loved music, and most of my heroes when I was growing up were musicians, so it just sort of was a logical extension of that to pick up guitar and try and learn how to play.
Oh, I see. Okay. Now, what direction do you feel that your music is going? I mean, since the Animal Rights CD, it seems that you've kind of returned to a more house techno dance sound.
And I wouldn't call. I mean, play certainly has. It's, you know, in some ways, it's been influenced by the house and techno scene, but I certainly wouldn't call it a house or a techno record.
Oh, really?
I mean, there's acoustic piano and acoustic guitar and acoustic drums and strings and like. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't put it on. If I was a DJ in a nightclub, I wouldn't play any of the songs off of play.
Right.
But I mean, stylistically in the future, I don't know. I just want to make records that I love. And I don't, you know, when I'm working on a record, I'm not thinking about what style of music it is. I'm just thinking about how the music affects me emotionally.
Okay. And how does it make you feel when people say that you are a model and inspiration for their music?
I guess I would be very flattered because, you know, I mean, I have a lot of musical heroes who've certainly inspired me, and the fact that I could possibly serve that purpose for someone else, I find it very humbling and very flattering.
Okay. Now, have you played a tour of this size before in terms of seating? Or like I believe you played in Lollapalooza, I remember.
Yeah, I did Lollapalooza in 95, and every summer for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, I've gone to Europe and play festivals where, you know, sometimes we're playing in front of 80,000 people.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But, you know, this MTV tour that we're doing is strange because, you know, every date is, you know, between like 4 and 8,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice because, you know, the guy who does my lights is a really phenomenal lighting designer, and we have a big, huge lighting rig to play with. So, you know, the fact that we're playing bigger venues, I think it really, you know, from a lighting perspective and from a production perspective, it really works.
Okay. And now, how would you, if someone came up and asked you what a Moby concert is like, what would you tell them?
I would say that it's, you know, part of the concert is just sort of like overpowering spectacle.
Uh-huh.
And part of it is really gentle and intimate. Part of it's really aggressive. Part of it's, you know, funny. Part of it's very serious. You know, I'd say it's just very diverse. I mean, because my goal when it comes to putting on a concert is basically to present a concert that I would want to see if I was in the audience.
Okay.
Because most of the time when I go to see live music, I'm bored to death. You know, it's just, there's so many awful cliches that musicians fall into when they get on stage. You know, the worst cliche is the sort of like the arrogant musician who won't interact with the audience.
Okay.
Sort of stands there and doesn't do anything. And I just, you know, if you're going to put something on stage, make it entertaining.
Alright, and we're gonna, this is gonna be a short interview. We've got one more question left, and that's all. What do you feel is next for yourself? What are you planning to do in the near future?
Well, at present, it looks as if I'll be on tour until next November. Mm-hmm. And I started touring last July, so really all I can think about right now is touring, and then come next November, all I want to do then is, you know, the day the tour ends, just run back home and start working on my next record.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Well, on behalf of the Wildcat again, thank you very much for taking the time out to talk to us.
This might be a naive question. Are we playing at your university?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you guys are playing in about a week, actually. A week from Monday.
Really?
Down in Tucson, Arizona. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember seeing that on the itinerary.
Yeah, so it's really hot down here. It's like 90 degrees, so maybe a little different than from where you're at right now.
So right now, we're in Illinois and it's springtime, but the last 4 days we were in Minnesota and Michigan and it was snowing.
Oh, wow.
So.
It'll be much different when you get down here.